from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in Forums next hour, we'll discuss dining out in these recession times, and we'll get good food tips on what food is in vogue and where you can find some of the best dining experiences in and around the Bay Area. We'll have a number of restaurant critics with us as we also hear from you, our listeners, and talk about restaurants to go to and perhaps to avoid. That's coming up next right here after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's forum. And in this forum hour, we're bringing together a number of Bay Area restaurant critics. In fact, what do you call a number of Bay Area restaurant critics? A gaggle of restaurant critics or a bevy of restaurant critics? Because we're going to talk with them about dining out, about food trends, and about restaurants to go to or perhaps even to stay away from in these economically difficult times. And here in studio with us, we want to welcome Jonathan Kaufman, who's food critic for San Francisco, for SF Weekly, excuse me. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
And Marcia Gagliardi is also here. She's a food critic with TableHopper.com, and good morning to you.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno, if you prefer. Sted Holbrook is here with us as well. He's a food editor for Metro Silicon Valley. Good morning.
Hello, Michael.
Hello to you. And Jan Newberry, joining us by phone this morning, is food editor for San Francisco Magazine, and she's joining us from her home in the East Bay to talk about, well, East Bay restaurants with us.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. Actually, you're not in the East Bay. I misspoke myself. You're up in the Russian River, huh?
I'm up on vacation in the Russian River, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, we've located where you are, and we're glad to have you. Let's begin by talking a little bit about trends. But before we do that, Jonathan Kaufman, you know, we were talking before we went on the air, I was talking with the producers about the fact that you go into – we don't go into that many high-end restaurants. We are, after all, employees in public radio. But you go into the nicest restaurants or the middle-range restaurants or whatever, they're flourishing, and restaurants are – you know, burgeoning, it seems. In this economy, it almost is paradoxical.
I think a lot of us are scratching our heads about how that has happened. I think that there, you know, San Francisco, the Bay Area is a pretty rich region, and I think there still is a lot of money here. But I think a lot of the high-end restaurants that are opening right now are also funded by people who have other restaurants. So Michael Mina, for example, is moving Michael Mina to the old Aqua Space and then opening up bourbon steak in the St. Francis mm-hmm. Hotel. And then you've got the folks behind Village Pub and Spruce, who are opening Cafe des Amis in Cow Hollow. And
they're taking a lot of their regular customers.
Exactly.
So that's working. Yeah. I mean, it's just still kind of baffling in many ways. I mean, here we were in the last hour talking about the difficulty of buying homes and, you know, how housing prices, purchases have gone down and just this recession we're living in. But we're also living at a time when we're seeing a lot of different things. We were talking, well, before we went on the air, molecular gastronomy was sort of bandied about in conversation. And that's a big trend now, isn't it? You've written about it, Jonathan.
I have written about it. In fact, the review that came out yesterday was about a restaurant where they're using a lot of the molecular gastronomy idioms like foams and gels and powders and they're applying them to farm-to-table cuisine. So I think it's a very Bay Area interpretation of an international trend.
A lot of fire going on, huh?
Yeah. It's Saison, Josh. Exactly.
You know, I was also reading, you know, you writing about how California cuisines are kind of being squeezed out a little bit by different sorts of fusions.
I think it's not squeezed out so much as I think that there's a new generation of chefs who are opening their own restaurants, and some of them are very small and some of them are much bigger, more well-funded. But I think we've had about 10 years of a very minimalist, very farm-focused style of cooking that's been based in French and Italian cuisine. And I think there's a new generation of chefs who really want to play a lot more. And so they're not afraid to bring in more cuisines, different kinds of cuisines into their cooking. A lot of those are very personal, Such
and
as
despite
like,
these vegan times and the words of Michael Pollan, a lot more meat.
Yeah, that too.
And Marcia, we're in a pizza craze too, aren't we? Sorry.
Yes, which I have to say, I don't lament it too much, although I know my cohorts in media every week were like, really, another pizza place opening? But it's something, you know, as a daughter of an ex-pizzeria owner, I'm very happy to see such quality pizza coming to the city. Recently, Bruce Hill's opening of 00 in Soma in the former Aussie space, he does one of the most fantastic crusts, just extraordinary pizza. And it's funny, he's calling it Calapolitan, so it's a little bit of a cross between a Neapolitan aesthetic with some California ingredients. And I'm personally very much excited for the opening of Ragazza, which is from Sharon Ardiana. And she has the delicious Gelina in Glen Park. And that's going to be opening probably in September on Divisadero, in the, right by the Cafe Metro, the little the Metro Hotel. She does also a really – her crust is really unique. And she has this beautiful – oven that she found. It's I was calling it her Ferrari. It's, you know, bright red tile, and it's like her new baby. And then the big one that everyone's anticipating is Una Pizza Napoletana, which is from Anthony Mangieri, and he moved west from New York. And this man is bar none, the master of the Neapolitan style pizza. And so he's going to be opening in Soma. And it's funny because it's been kind of this cloaked project. Not many details have been released about it. And he's just been operating in a bit of a stealth manner. So it'll be really exciting when the pizzeria opens.
Well, it's interesting that you're privy to all that. you have underground or subterranean contacts, clearly. in fact, I was struck by some of your reviewing because you have sort of the top 10 that you offer us. And I assume it's in order, hierarchical, sort of like the Ten Commandments, maybe the top one. Actually, the top one, Barbaco, you had right at the top.
Oh, that's from my homepage on tablehopper.com. It's just 10 places to eat at now. So they're
not necessarily the 10 best.
No, not at all. It's more just recent places on my radar, places where I've had really enjoyable meals. One of them, Nombe, I just adore, out on Mission and 21st from Nick Bala. And he's doing a little bit of a modern interpretation of some Japanese izakaya dishes. But one of them that I really love is the motsu. And what he's done is he's taking it's almost like Japanese Mexican tripe because he braises it and then grills it. So it has kind of this carne asada effect with avocado, serrano chilies, a little bit of cilantro. It's incredible. And it definitely feels like a dish of a place. It's like, this is in the Mission, and we're having, you know, this late night Japanese food, but with totally, you know, kind of Mission Mexican flair.
Well, you're also raving about this place over on 17th and Valencia, Bar Tartine. Is that how it's called? Although I don't know that I would eat braised hog jowls, for example. I mean, doesn't
don't be afraid.
Invite my palate.
They're only precious too. Yeah. I think Chris Kroner is really, he's just developed a wonderful style over there. He's been crafting just one of the most decadent burgers in the city. You have the option of a nice swath of bone marrow that you can get on it if you're feeling emboldened. You've had a good week at the gym. But I was just there the other night and had, you know, they have that delicious cast iron skillet chicken that they do. It is a huge portion of chicken for something like $23, $25. I mean, I literally brought half of it home and enjoyed it for a salad the next day.
Speaking of chicken, you know, there has been kind of a cupcake trend that's been going on. We can possibly ignore that or talk about it if we like. But what I was struck by was there's this place, American Cupcake, and I happen to know the owner out on Union, and they do this red velvet chicken. You know about this, where they take cake batter and put it with chicken. It's incredible to me because it's gotten publicity all over the world, literally, and people are lining up to eat red velvet chicken.
Certain dishes really capture people's fancy from perhaps it's just a creative execution that, you know, personally, I will say I am a gambling woman. I try almost everything once, but that one,
Have you tried Ike sandwiches?
Yes. I've had to be very strategic about what time to show up over there. But
I mean, this has also been getting incredible publicity.
Massive press.
By the way, Marcia Gagliardi, again, is a food critic with Table Hopper, and Sted Holbrook's food editor for the Metro Silicon Valley. South Bay gets kind of a bad press in some ways, Sted. We were talking about this before we went on the air, because you think about all these fancy dining places. You normally associate them with the East Bay. You associate them with San Francisco, to a lesser degree, Marin. There's some great places to eat in the South Bay.
Absolutely. And the South Bay is a very different dining scene. I mean, the trend in the South Bay is we don't have any trends, really. We definitely
not
have
ramen.
Well, we're going to talk about ramen, I hope. That's one of my absolute favorites. But, you know, there are certainly some very fine high-end places like Manresa and Keigetsu in Menlo Park, the Plumed Horse in Saratoga, and several others. But really, for me, the strength and the most interesting part of the South Bay are all the quote-unquote ethnic eateries, you know, sort of out in the strip malls in places like
mainly Asian, actually. Yeah.
Well, Asian, sort of Japanese, Chinese, Vietnamese, Korean for sure. Yeah. South Indian is very strong because of the tech industry. There's a lot of programmers that come from India, mainly South India, China. So these people want a taste of home. And so this is, you know, food cooked by natives for natives. And it's
what we call the real stuff.
Yeah. It's the real deal. Absolutely. Yeah. And you have to seek it out. And a lot of times people don't speak English, but you are certainly welcomed of, you know, people of any stripe. And it goes on and on. I mean, I just spend my days driving around looking, combing the mini malls, looking for appealing looking places. And there's quite a bit.
So let's talk about ramen then.
Yes, please.
Any specific recommendations?
Absolutely. There is in the city of San Jose, there are three of my favorite ramen joints within probably half a mile of each other. So there's one called Ramen Halu, which is on Saratoga Avenue. Another place called Kahu, again, just a few blocks away. And in the same shopping center is a place called Santoka Ramen, which is in the Mitsuya Marketplace. It's a Japanese grocery store. And Santoka is actually a chain. This is, I think, the first one in Northern California. But if you've never had real ramen, it's just absolutely another order of magnitude of deliciousness. I mean, it's rich porky broth and fresh noodles and layered with
Judy Campbell salivating over there in her producer seat. You're doing a very good job.
I'm making myself hungry. It's a bit of a joke where I work that I seem to do a ramen review every other week, but it's important to get these places out there. So
Camino Real in Sunnyvale is the place for South Indian food.
El Camino, right. It's you know, a strip, a boulevard, you know, that runs the length of Silicon Valley. And in particular, Santa Clara and Sunnyvale are where Korean and Indian restaurants sort of commingle. So if you are a vegetarian and fond of spicy food, you can eat very well South Indian food. Places like Udupi Palace or Dosa Place, they specialize in these very large crepes and pancakes called dosas and uthapam, and all kinds of chutneys and things to dip them in, and really fantastic stuff. And the Korean food is not too shabby either. I discovered a place called Jang Su Jang, which, among other things, specializes in a soup that's called a number of different things, but it's affectionately known as army base stew. And it's sort of a fusion cuisine that grew out of the Korean War, and using surplus American commodities like Spam, Velveeta cheese, and hot dogs. And that sounds probably kind of repulsive.
Yeah, but, it does.
And the broth turns sort of a day glow orange, but mixed with noodles and some other fresh vegetables, it's actually quite enjoyable. It's worth seeking out.
Sted Holbrook, food editor of the Metro Silicon Valley. Any relation to Hal, by the way?
Not that I know of.
No. Let's bring Jan Newberry into this. She's food editor of San Francisco Magazine, and she's here to talk about the East Bay, which continues to be a wondrous place for many people in terms of dining out. Oakland, particularly in some ways, has gained in its reputation. I mean, for so many years it was Berkeley and that strip in Berkeley that is so well known for great restaurants. Oakland really coming up here, Jan, huh?
Oakland really is having its moment right now. It's a pretty exciting time over there. The big one that we're all waiting for is Plum, Daniel Patterson's new restaurant to open downtown. and that should be opening, I think, in just a couple of weeks. And, of course, Daniel has Qua in the city. He's got two Michelin stars. So he's going to, you know, it's a restaurant like that's going to be a real destination restaurant for downtown Oakland, which is going to be very exciting.
You got another restaurant over there, Comus, which has a Michelin star. You know? Comey, I'm sorry. I'm putting an S on there because I'm forgetting the way it should actually be pronounced. Comey.
James Siabu's restaurant is another very exciting destination spot on Piedmont Avenue. And so you're seeing a different – Oakland for years has had some great little neighborhood restaurants, but these chefs are really coming in and ramping up the game there, bringing a lot of fresh attention to the city.
And can you bring attention to this place, True Burger, on Grand near Uptown in Oakland? Because is it really a great burger?
It is an excellent burger. It's a great little, you know, it's a kind of an updated fast food spot. So, you know, good fries, really great milkshakes. They're doing wonderful burgers there. So it's kind of in between Broadway and the lake. And it's, I think they're open late at night because uptown in Oakland, there's a lot of clubs, a lot of great music venues. We have the Paramount and the Fox. So people looking for food, you know, before and after the show. So we've got a lot of places down there serving that audience.
Well, there are a lot of people looking for a burger sort of like the Grail. no less than the owner of the French Laundry told me on this program that he loved In-N-Out. Anybody want to mention a favorite burger?
I love the burger at Serpentine.
This is Jonathan Kaufman.
It's Prather Ranch beef, but for I don't know
at
what
Serpentine,
he does
did
to
you
it.
Say, yeah.
Serpentine, that's down in Dog Patch. I don't know what he does to the patty, but it was the juiciest burger I think I have ever had. It sort of spurted out across the plate. It was a little obscene, but also really delicious.
like an upgrade Carl's Jr. commercial.
Do people still go to Bill's? I'm talking about San Francisco now.
For an old school burger, yeah. I mean, they do a quality job there. It's, you know, any little old-school counter with a chandeliers. It's a fun one. But I have to say, I had kind of a transcendent burger last week at Don Pisto's in North Beach. And it's a newish place. It moved into the former El Regon. It was an Argentine steakhouse before. And he's done something, the chef, Pete Marabe, he has, basically what he does is he cooks up some bacon and then cooks up onions in the bacon fat. And then is grinding the onion and the bacon in with the beef and making a patty out of it that's slathered with avocado. Really nice bun that he gets from Italian-French baking company right around the corner. So it's incredibly fresh. That burger, and it was only like $13. And I have to say, I was like, wow, why haven't we been grinding onion and bacon into our beef? Because it was, it was all kinds of decadent.
Any place in South Bay?
Yes, there's a new restaurant called Madeira. Madeira, which opened in I guess it's a resort, the Rosewood Resort, and it's very visible right off 280 at Sand Hill Road. And it's become a place where, you know, at least as I observe, a lot of high-tech moguls and venture capitalists go, and they've got something called the Sand Hill Burger. And it's a simple burger in that it's, you know, it doesn't have anything sort of ground into the beef like that, but it's grilled over oak, and it's got just a nice, really light ciabatta bun, and bacon, of course, helps. And the restaurant itself is just very beautiful. It overlooks the coastal range and you know, the hills west of Stanford. So it's really just the whole atmosphere. But the burger on itself is
well. Let's get back
top-notch.
For a moment just to restaurants in general and trends. I mean, we can talk about burgers all day. I mean, we're getting some great recommendations here. But, I mean, restaurants – Jonathan, you like Sons and Daughters, and I wanted to get that on the record.
I really did. Yeah. Because they were trying something very new, very different from the mainstream California cuisine style. For example, he was the salad that opened up the meal was an herb salad, and the herbs were grown in one of the chef's mother's gardens, and he had shaved fennel in there, and then curds and whey, so there was a sort of a milky foam on one side, and then curds of fresh made cheese on the plate as well, and fresh flowers, and then he'd fried quinoa. And then scattered that over the salad and added a eucalyptus oil to the vinaigrette. So it had this really, really lovely, bright, but also subtle interplay of textures and flavors.
And another restaurant, Jan Newberry, that you are high on, I want to get a few of these again over in the East Bay, is Tamarindo. That's right downtown Oakland.
That's great.
That's a great Mexican restaurant in downtown Oakland. It's a little more higher end. You know, it's not a taqueria. But they are doing some of the most sophisticated, nuanced, lovely Mexican food in the region, I think. And they just opened a tequila bar. They expanded a little bit, and now they're serving a wide range of tequilas. They make excellent margaritas and cocktails there. It's one of those restaurants that really captures the spirit of Oakland in so many ways, you know, just the diversity of it, the type of people who eat there, the sophistication of the cuisine. It's a great restaurant. I can't recommend it enough.
And talk a little bit about Camino, because Russell Moore, I guess, was considering San Francisco but decided, no, Oakland's a better place for me.
Yeah, I think that they did that. They opened that restaurant, I think, 2 years ago now, and it's been a great success over there on Grand Avenue. Russell's doing everything out of a fireplace. So it's quite an impressive restaurant when you walk in, this huge brick room, and in the back the fire's glowing, and Russell and his chefs are back there just pulling everything out of the coals. It's a very limited menu. You know, they just do a few items that they can really capture well in the fire there. But it's really caught on, and again, attracted a lot of the neighbors. I knew when they were opening there, because that strip of Grand Avenue didn't have a lot of really good restaurants yet, so people were very excited. But now Charlie Hollowell from Pizzaiolo has opened Boot and Shoe, a small, focusing again on his wonderful pizzas across the street there. So we're seeing a lot more, you know, again, it's a sign of the growth in Oakland, how people are kind of spreading out, going and branching into new neighborhoods.
And again, Jan Newberry,
the crowd's come.
Food editor for San Francisco Magazine. Jonathan Kaufman is food critic for SF Weekly. Big story, talking about trends again, Jonathan, street food.
Yep. Street food seems to be on everybody's mind. Last year was the year of food carts and all of the illegal, a lot of folks who were unemployed or underemployed decided to start setting up tables and selling food that they cooked in their kitchens in public spaces and also at bars. And because of Twitter, they got a lot of attention, and a lot of them have some very big followings. But this year has been all about food trucks. Most of the street carts are operating under the radar, some of them illegally. But the food trucks are trying to work in catering trucks like taco trucks, and they're trying to be fully permitted and work with the police department and the health department to legally sell on the street. And that's quite a challenge in San Francisco. It's less of one in Oakland and Emeryville and down in the South Bay. But San Francisco likes to make it difficult for them. But nevertheless, a number of them have persevered.
Well, we haven't mentioned Marin, Sonoma, Napa. We want to hit the North Bay here. Actually, what I'm going to do is open the phone lines, because you, our listeners, ought to take advantage of the fact that we have four really fine restaurant critics with us. And you may have some suggestions and recommendations of your own, either pro or con, whatever. We'd certainly like to hear from you, and we welcome your phone calls. And all you have to do is dial toll-free, 866-733-6786. Please feel free to join the program. You're cordially invited to do so. Again, our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. You can also send us an email, and our email address is forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. And if you need advice, or you want to talk about food, or want to talk about particularly what excites you in the way of new trends in food, whatever, we're wide open here for your calls. Jonathan Kaufman, food critic with SF Weekly, with us in studio. Stett Holbrook, food editor for the Metro Silicon Valley, also here in studio. And Marcia Gagliardi, food critic with TableHopper.com, in studio with us. And Marcia wanted me to mention, so I will, that she's doing a benefit for La Cocina tomorrow. It features many brand new restaurants, and there's one day left to bid. You can find out more by going to what website?
It's on eBay.
eBay. Okay.
Yeah, it's a very progressive dinner with the Table Hopper.
And Jan Newberry is with us, food editor for San Francisco Magazine. When we return, you'll be with us. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're getting the latest on Bay Area dining with a panel of restaurant critics. With us in studio is Stett Holbrook, food editor of Metro Silicon Valley, and Jonathan Kaufman, food critic for SF Weekly, and Marcia Gagliardi, who is food critic for TableHopper.com. And with us by phone this morning, Jan Newberry, food editor for San Francisco Magazine. Looking at some emails here, Pam from Albany says, a burger for only $13? I'm glad public radio is free. At least I can afford that.
Okay. Ouch.
Here's a listener who says, funny you should mention Michael Minna's success. It has not come without a cost to his employees. They took a $1 an hour pay cut a few months ago and were recently asked to take another. The average cost of an assistant chef in the San Francisco Bay Area also is an interesting topic, about $13 to $15 per hour. These are trained chefs from the FCCCA. These are the backbone of your food service and prep. Points to ponder. And another listener writes, she says, my own recommendations are Millennium, Cafe Gratitude, and Amber, amazing vegetarian-friendly restaurants in San Francisco. Veg, maybe she means vegan, I'm not sure, or vegetarian perhaps. My daughter raves about Amber, by the way. Heather writes, my boyfriend and I are both vegetarian. We love getting dressed up and going out to eat. The Bay Area is so informal that often a cocktail dress and a button-up shirt seem overdressed, even at fairly pricey restaurants. Could any of your guests suggest a vegetarian-friendly restaurant where coat and tie would be the norm?
Well, you could. I mean, what's amazing is a number of fine dining establishments offer vegetarian menus. So, for example, La Folie on Polk, they have a special little jardiniere menu, as well as Fleur-de-Lis. Or Fleur-de-Lis, as Hubert says it. And let me think.
I already did that with Call Me.
Well.
Saying
yeah.
Call Me
does a vegetarian
yes.
tasting menu
yep.
as well. If you want to spend $300, there are places you can do it.
Oh, yeah. They'll take your money.
Yeah.
Instead, here's Tony who writes, not mentioning Shea TJ in Mountain View is criminal. Having sampled molecular gastronomy several times, I think I have it figured out. Each serving is about the size of a molecule. This is, of course, the logical next step in the progression from real food to the tasting menu. You know Shea TJ?
I do, and I knew I'd forget one in my list of must-eat restaurants, and that is certainly one.
This guy wants you arrested, though.
Okay, come after me. No, that's highly recommended. They have a relatively new chef there. There's been a bit of turnover there lately, but I was there a couple months ago and enjoyed it very much. The chef who left, Bruno Chamel, has what is really the South Bay's only real outpost of molecular gastronomy, and that's Bome in Palo Alto, and that's recommended as well.
So how many times a week do you guys eat out, do you figure, as restaurant critics?
5, 6.
7 to 12.
7 to 12.
Oh, yeah. How many times versus how many nights, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Almost every night, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just curious. Jan, what about you?
I get out quite a bit. You know, I try to do a lot of lunches. And I, you know, I like to try and balance it out getting home with the family. But, yeah, I get out a few nights a week. So it's a, you know, I can't complain. I can't complain. It's not a bad life.
Well,
it's not a bad way to make it.
Yeah, what about taking families out? I mean,
it works very well for me. My son is almost 11, and he's grown up with this. He's an adventurous eater. He enjoys going to restaurants. He knows how to behave. So it's a lot of fun, and it's fun to get a kid's perspective on it. I know in Oakland, especially all the restaurants that I've mentioned tonight, on the show this morning, have been very welcoming of us. And I know the first time I ate at Pizzaiolo, I ate there on the night it opened, Charlie Hollowell's restaurant on Telegraph Avenue, and Charlie came over and he said, thank you so much for bringing your kid, that he wanted it to be a family restaurant. So that's certainly true of Camino, Tamarindo, the restaurants that I go to in Oakland, kids are always seem always welcome.
So you're one of those restaurant critics who is recognized where you go. I mean, nobody here has to dress up like Ruth Reichel, do they? Or?
I wear a mask.
You know, bringing kids, though,
is... You know, Josh Sims is our critic, not me, so...
You're going to say Stead.
I was just going to say I don't often go out to eat with my family, but when I do, it's great cover. On the one hand, not come under a lot of suspicion. But when you have kids who are making a mess, I mean, there's really no risk of anyone buttonholing you as a critic. But it also tests a restaurant's sort of service, and they're willing to cooperate and help you out with sometimes unruly kids. But my kids do a great job.
Go to your calls, and we go first to you, Ken. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. You gastronomes seem to nosh in a recession-free bubble. I'm really enjoying the show, but please disclose entree pricing. For example, I love pizza, but I do feel a bit like a sucker paying filet mignon prices for what's essentially dough and toppings.
Well, I mean, I think it goes, food costs go beyond just the dough, or if people go out and you order pasta, you're like, oh, it would only cost me $4 to make this at home. But you also have, you know, a restaurant with rent and staff and quality ingredients. And I think there are so many more components that go into the dining out experience. You have your server and the glass you're drinking your wine out of. And so while, you know, I think there pizza is still something within a under $20 recession-friendly price point, I think. And you can still have the experience of dining out, which is funny because San Franciscans, you know, even in a hard economy, we really don't want to cut our dining out.
Well, let's do this. Why don't we get a good cheap eat recommendation from each of you? Can we do that?
Oh, happily.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jan, let me start with you over in the East Bay. What would you recommend?
Well, you know, this question is always a tough one for me, but we like to go out to Fruitvale Avenue and out to that neighborhood in Oakland with all the great taco trucks. And there's, I can't remember. I know Mariscos, Jonathan knows or John Birdsall.
Yeah.
La Costa? Yeah, with all the octopus tostadas and all those things. That's a big favorite with my family. Great food out there.
All right.
I'll take that one.
How about all these studio guests? Stead, start with you. In the South Bay.
Sure. The taco truck trend has started to pop up in the South Bay, and there's a Korean/Mexican taco truck called Barbecue Kalbi, and $3-$4 for eel tacos and short rib quesadillas. Some pretty interesting combinations, and you know, bring $5 and you'll eat well.
Marcia?
Last night I had a total feast at Mission Chinese Food, which is on Mission at about 18th Street. And it's in the Lungshan Chinese restaurant. And it's where it was kind of this experiment in a temporary restaurant that was happening last year called Mission Street Food. It started as a taco truck. And then it was with Anthony Mintz, who was
started as a taco truck and became
a Chinese
restaurant.
And then they moved into this Chinese restaurant because of just issues with, you know, where their truck was and permits. And so they were working alongside Lungshan, and they were allowed to take over the restaurant one night a week. And now what the chefs have done, Danny Boyan, who is at Farina before, working alongside Anthony, so Mission Chinese Food is there. It's, in a way, I consider it like chef food in that it's the Asian food that you want to go out and eat, but with quality ingredients. So they're doing the most beautiful chashu pork belly over these silky noodles that what I love is that they're sourcing their noodles from various businesses around the mission. And it was $8.50 for just an absolutely delicious dish. My friend, he was ready to double down and order a second batch.
Half the cost of your hamburger.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. But most of the dishes are about $8 or $9. And a lot of them are, you know, definitely feature the spicy, tingling, numbing sensations of Sichuan peppercorn. So you have to go in there liking spice. Otherwise, it might be a little challenging. But
Jonathan?
I just had lunch a couple days ago, and they also do dinner at a place called Burmese Kitchen. It's an old deli in the Tenderloin, and it's owned by some Burmese Americans. And they have slowly transformed the restaurant into a Burmese restaurant, and you'll hear a lot of Burmese spoken there. And
you won't hear Myanmar, though. You'll hear Burma.
Right. Yeah. And they do these lunch specials, lunch combos for $8, where I got a pork curry that was just this amazingly tender, deeply flavored curry served with rice and bamboo shoots that had been stir-fried with turmeric. And, you know, $8. It's fantastic.
And his tea leaf salad that he does there.
Oh, it's great.
The
yeah.
tea leaves, he gets them really fresh. He has some connection. So it's a revelatory dish in terms of
they read the tea leaves, too.
Yeah. That'll be extra, Michael.
Here's a revelatory remark from a listener named Melanie. It's one to contemplate. A few weeks ago, 7x7 magazine suggested that there might be too much food media coverage in the Bay Area. Interesting thought. Let me go to your calls. We're going to go to Jimmy in San Francisco. Jimmy, hi.
Hi, how you doing? I have a small seafood distribution business, so I spend a lot of time in the back of the kitchen. And I think what you see is, hey, I'm very surprised that many restaurants are opening, but you see more time and effort put into what's going into the kitchen, maybe a little bit less in the core. And a lot of the chefs really focus on working with smaller menus and rather doing fewer things.
Jimmy, are you talking in a tin can? I'm sorry. Go ahead. I think we got the gist of that. It was a bad connection, though. I'm wondering if there's more emphasis on food now because people in your profession have told us that what people want most is food. They care about that more than they care about decor, aesthetics, service, you know, and you got smaller menus, you got health-minded, so the emphasis much more on the food.
Well, I think that's part of how San Francisco restaurants have stayed so vibrant. I think people spent a long time worrying about how to survive in, you know, with the cost of living increasing so dramatically. And these are the concessions they've made. And I think diners are willing to make those concessions, too, to have great food.
And let me hear from some more of our listeners who will go to Oakland. Joan, good morning.
Hi. Yes, I am, as a transplanted New Yorker, desperate to find a good New York pizza.
I thought you were going to say corned beef sandwich, but
I was waiting for deli. Yeah,
deli is the next one.
Well, she does have a good new place to try in North Beach. It's a new offshoot. There's Tony's Pizza Napolitana, which he is a Neapolitan pizza champion. But he just next door opened the Tony's Coal-Fired Pizza and Slice House. And he has one of the only coal-fired pizza ovens in, I think, the Bay Area is what we could safely assume. And he's doing some New York slices. He's doing – and then some more Italian style too, like pizza al metro. But, I mean, of course, the classic for San Franciscans is Aranel on Valencia at 16th. They do a great New York slice. I have sent New Yorkers there to get their slice.
You got some good advice, Joan. So maybe you won't have to feel so lonely for New York pizza anymore. Thank you for the call. We're going to go next to Palo Alto. Stephanie, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Thank you. Okay.
Excellent. I'm calling because, you know, I tried a restaurant last night that I've been recommended by a few different groups of my friends. And it's called Cedro, C-E-D-R-O. And it's an Italian restaurant owned by an Italian family that's actually local. It was amazing because last night, not only was the food amazing, they used small family farmers, and they had live opera singers. So it was really cool. I was wondering if any of you have heard about it.
This is in Menlo Park?
Yes, it is.
Stead, you're not familiar?
I think she said Palo Alto. I have not heard of that, and thank you very much.
She's in Palo Alto. The restaurant's in Menlo.
Gotcha. Okay. And Vedro, I'll check it out. The South Bay, in my opinion, is really lacking in Italian food or non-Italian American Italian food. So I appreciate the tip. There's a place that I would also suggest you check out in – it's actually in East Palo Alto, but it seems like it's more Palo Alto. It's just west of 101 in the Four Seasons Hotel, and it's called Quattro. The chef of many years just left, so I have not been there since to see if the quality's still there, but it's quite good.
And let me thank the caller. And Jan Newberry, here's a question from a listener, like your take on how political are the wine lists at the mid to higher end restaurants? This listener says, I hear that some restaurants are coerced to buy from one distributor versus another, so their selection is more limited. On the other hand, maybe that's easier.
I think I hear a little bit of that grumbling that, you know, certain distributors put pressure on, the wine directors at restaurants to do their lists. But we have so many great wine lists around here, and so many interesting places to drink wine. So I don't find it too big of a problem. Nopa, what Chris Deegan is doing there, what an interesting wine list at Akote in Oakland, great wine list. So it doesn't, from a consumer standpoint, I feel like I can still go out and drink great wine, and I'm going to find interesting, diverse wine lists that go beyond just the standard little, you know, list of Chardonnays and Pinots and standard wines. They're going to get more interesting things from all, you know, from a global perspective.
And here's Paul who says, best burger you ever had, the Beltane Ranch at the Breakaway Cafe in Sonoma. Like I said, I don't want to ignore the North Bay here. Get some Jan, what were your recommendations up north? I'm talking about Marin, Sonoma, Napa.
So, Napa's having a great revival right now. There's Morimoto just opened up there, the former Iron Chef. Really interesting restaurant up there in Napa with great high-end Japanese food. What else is up here? You know, tonight we're going to go try out the Kenwood Inn, and they have a I haven't tried it yet, so this is just looking forward to it, but a tapas-served dim sum style dinner over there. Wow, over in Sebastopol, there's Pizza Vino 707, which is Stephen Singer's restaurant. He famously is Alice Waters' former husband, but he's got a nice pizza place, and he's a winemaker, so it's got a great wine list going on there. Scott Howard just opened Brick and Bottle. And so there's a lot of really interesting things going on in the North Bay.
Brick and Bottle is right where...
Corte Madera.
In Corte Madera, yeah, where the steak place used to be. Izzy's used to be, yeah. Let's go to more of your calls. We'll go to Tim. Excuse me. Welcome, Tim. You're on.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I noticed that you haven't been talking about dessert restaurants or where you can get a great dessert after your great meal, but there's a new place on Church Street called Thoroughbred Bakery, and it's a traditional French bakery, and the pastries that are created in this place are phenomenal. She never, I can't remember the owner's name, but she doesn't use any shortenings. It's all flour, butter, sugar, and I have to say, if I can put in a mention for her Carmel Napoleon, it's probably one of the best desserts I have ever had. And they make it, everything is made fresh every day, and I highly, highly recommend it.
Now, the place, it's Thoroughbred.
Yeah, you want to talk about dessert places? Let's get your recommendations. We'll begin with you, Marcia.
Well, I've always been a huge fan of Michelle Polzin's desserts at Range on Valencia, and especially right now because they are part of this peach tree adoption program with Masumoto Farms. And actually, I picked peaches on that farm last year. They're the most extraordinary Alberta peaches. And so they have all their peaches in, and she's making tarts and this exquisite peach leaf. It was in an ice box cake that I had, and it tasted almost like almond. It was delicious. But she's extraordinarily talented. I love what she does with seasonal fruit. And I'm also a big fan, just not too far down on Valencia, Mission Beach Cafe.
And are we still in the cupcake craze, by the way? Jonathan, you want to add?
Yes. yeah, cupcakes aren't going away anytime soon.
What do you like in dessert places?
I don't remember his name, but there's a new young pastry chef at Thermidor, which is on Mint Plaza downtown. And he was sous chef.
Kyle Caporicci, yeah.
Caporicci. And he's doing these amazingly creative desserts for $8 or $10. And one of them is called Coffee and Cigarettes, where he takes a white chocolate tube that he it looks like a cigarette, and he fills it with a tobacco infused cream that's like mostly peppery, and he serves it with a tiny little carrot cake donut and then a pile of coffee grounds, which are actually sort of this dark chocolate cookie that he's crumbled on the plate. It's nothing looks like what it tastes, but it all tastes amazing.
You want to add anything here, Sted Holberg, from down the South Bay?
Sure, I have a few. As far as bakeries, there's a bakery in Los Gatos called Flor de Coco, and they have what is, for me, the most delicious almond croissant I've ever had. It's absolutely fantastic. At Bome, this restaurant I mentioned in Palo Alto, the pastry chef there, also who is the chef de cuisine, Ryan Shelton, I think is his name, is making some pretty extraordinary desserts. And then for something a little more simple, there's Andy's Orchard, which is an orchard in Morgan Hill. And I believe it has the most extensive plantings of heirloom peaches, plums, all kinds of stone fruits. And everything is at the absolute peak of the season right now. So these are fruits that can't travel to the store because they are so delicate and juicy and ripe. So you can just pick them right off the tree and eat your dessert that way.
I also remember reading one of your reviews, Marcia, of Chilango, where you said not only are they sassy waiters, but the best churros. You've sampled enough churros, huh?
Yeah. Those churros are really – they're almost like this mashup of like churro and cake. The texture of them is just perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me go to Jan on this in the East Bay. Jan, any recommendations? Jan Newberry?
Over at Comey, Carlos Salgado is the pastry chef there. He used to work at Qua in the city, and he's doing some really beautiful desserts there. He's got a chilled cream of white peach dessert on the menu right now. It has some sorbet and a lemon verbena snow. He uses a lot of interesting textures in his desserts. And he has another one, a chocolate brioche called Lost in the Fire. It's got some ashes and some kind of fiery taste, you know, a little burnt edges, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And uses garden herbs on that, a lot of interesting use of ingredients. So it's very you know, it's very forward thinking in these desserts here. A lot of really cool stuff.
Marcia, you had something else?
Oh, I just wanted to mention another, I think a little, not a city secret, but a cool thing to know is if you go to Qua, Daniel Patterson's restaurant on Broadway, they have a lounge, and Bill Corbett's desserts there are more on the inventive side, very, very delicious and seasonal. And so you could just go in there and have dessert in the lounge if you're craving a little something sweet. So.
Also, a lot of new ice cream places. I mean, they're pretty popular now, and I don't know if anybody has any specific recommendations. You do, Stan?
I do. It's not a new place, but it is really delicious. It's not so hot today, but the past few days when it was about 100 degrees in the South Bay, the ice cream was obviously very popular. And there's a place on El Camino Real again, and it's called Bombay Cafe. So it's South Indian vegetarian food and
curry ice cream, or
no? It's kulfi, which is so the milk is boiled down into sort of a concentrate, and it's, I guess you could equate it to gelato in its density and stickiness, but fantastic flavors, you know, pistachio and saffron and rose water. So you eat your spicy Indian food and follow it up with the ice cream right there. So that's a good one.
Well, in San Francisco, it used to be long lines outside Bud's, but those days are pretty much past. But there's a place now near the Mission where you still see long lines. You
know? Humphrey Slocum.
Humphrey, yeah, right. Wow. Let me look at some emails here. Andrew writes, bravo for representing Oakland and the South Bay, but San Francisco has its own ignored neighborhoods. The Broken Record, for instance, which won Best Bar on the Bay Guardian last year, has done something few restaurants anywhere do. Turn the spirit of its neighborhood into gourmet food its residents can afford. Duck confit salad, soft-shell crab, one of the best gourmet burgers in the city, and none of it over $10. Josh says, here are a few hidden gems. For excellent Basque cuisine, try Piperide in San Francisco. If you like seafood, $20 crab sandwich at Nick's Rockaway Beach in Pacifica is loaded with crab on sourdough and worth every penny. For Cuban food, try Habana Cuban Restaurant in San Jose. It's outstanding. And also, if your listeners or critics could suggest a good, authentic Cuban restaurant closer to San Francisco, that would be great. Anybody have one?
Well, I know there's Chan Chan up on 18th Street and Paladar on Kearney, but I haven't been there enough to judge the food.
Somebody else may be able to send it in. But here's Eric in Guerneville who says, came into the show a little bit late, so I'm not sure you've mentioned the great, mostly inexpensive restaurants on Geary and Clement Avenues in the city. Many different ethnicities represented, but especially notable are the many Hakka, Southeast Chinese, which is something a bit different, and cuisine restaurants, most notably Tongking, which has two locations on Geary, Great Dim Sum. I would have to agree. Marin writes, Tasso's old house in Gilroy has lovely Greek and Italian food. Tasso and his wife Maria do a nice job of welcoming families, making occasions special, and the food. My friend who lived in Greece couldn't believe how wonderful their moussaka was. I love their lamb and anything with feta. Wish Tasso would tell me how to get feta for home. Their soup is worth centering your week's calendar around. Rick from Palo Alto says, I love the Ethiopian restaurant called The Lunchbox. You know it?
I know of it. I have not been. A lot of great Ethiopian, in particularly in San Jose. Zini and Salam in particular stand out.
Place is tiny, maybe 9 tables, family run. Food is terrific. Well, let's go to more of your calls, and we'll go next to Mehdi. Good morning.
Hi. You guys talk about burger and everything, but nobody talk about cheesesteak. Cheesesteak is becoming very popular in California. And when I used to live in San Jose, I used to drive all the way to North Beach Buster's restaurant to get cheesesteak. Is there any cheesesteak place in San Jose that you know about that is as good as that one?
Amato's on Saratoga Avenue in San Jose, sort of the San Jose-Saratoga border, is quite good. There's a place called Jersey's that I went to a couple years ago that nice and cheesy and fatty and greasy and everything you want in a cheesesteak. And then the Korean taco truck, Barbecue Kalbi, actually makes a Korean Philly cheesesteak that's very
a
good.
A Korean chili cheesesteak.
I can get behind that.
Here's a listener in San Rafael, Stephen, who says, I've had great dining experiences at two San Francisco restaurants just in the last month. Radius, down on Folsom. The concept is that all food and drink comes from within a radius of 100 miles of the restaurant. Local food, dishes were unusual and delicious. Absinthe on Hayes, great food, service, and atmosphere. Two pretty well-known restaurants. And Kelly said, what about Marin? Poor Marin. Why so few interesting mid-range places with exciting menus? Not enough population to support it, or median age?
I feel for some of the people in Marin. It's got to be tough.
Well, there's the Buckeye, which...
You know. Go get some oysters, bingo. And, no, but I will say one place that I really like in Sausalito is Chibo. And I went there. It's funny. I recently did a piece for Marin Magazine on some of the tried and true and then the new classics.
Did you go to Poggio's in Sausalito?
I love Poggio.
Yeah, it's good.
I think Peter McNee does a wonderful job with some of his pastas and also using, you know, the whole – he has a whole animal perspective. So I really appreciate that he tries things like lamb brain francoboli pasta. But Chibo is a little gem. They've just started dinner service as well, I think Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But extraordinary breakfast. They're poached eggs, hands down, one of my favorite breakfasts.
All right, top recommendation because we're come to the end of the hour. Jonathan Kaufman.
Oh, man. It depends on what you're looking for. I would say, I do have to say I really love Sons and Daughters and also of restaurants that have opened up in the past year, Baker and Banker up in Pacific Heights.
Marcia?
It's a sweet place. I have to say I'm really excited about the wine program at Heirloom is a really unique little gem. It's on Folsom Street, kind of a, you know, sleepy little corner. Matt Strauss has done a really nice job there to create a simple style of food, but the wine list is really deep there. And
that be your recommendation instead.
Oh,
we're running close.
I'm going to mention Keigetsu in Menlo Park. It's Japanese food unlike most people probably have ever had.
And Jan Newberry.
I'm going to put a plug in for my favorite East Bay pizza, which is Amelia's over in Berkeley. The caller who called earlier looking for fabulous New York-style pizza, it really does not get any better. I cannot recommend Amelia's on Shattuck highly enough.
Well, thank you all for your recommendations, for your expertise. It's been, I think, for listeners, not only useful but fascinating hour. I want to thank Marcia Gagliardi and Jonathan Kaufman and Stead Holbrook and Jan Newberry. And, of course, thank you, our listeners. Thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our engineer now is Howard Gilman, and our interns, Ariel Niedermeyer, Nadia Reed, David Murder, and Elena Cadavani. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.